Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
What does it mean to be Black in America? In NPR's Black Stories, Black Truths, a collection of stories as varied, nuanced, and dynamic as Black experiences, you'll hear it means everything. Search NPR Black Stories, Black Truths wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm going back to what I used to do as a kid of making little adventures and making mini movies in my head. But now, because we have phones and essentially a movie studio in our pocket, I can film them now. Everyone's got their thing.
Everybody, and welcome to this week's episode of Fanatics, the podcast where we talk about things you love and that people love and that we all love all across the world. I'm Claire Kramer, of course, and today I'm here with my lovely co-host, David Magadoff.
That's me. I'm David Magadoff. Who are you with on other days?
I'm still with you and maybe another one of my personalities. And perhaps another one of yours. I'm not sure. We haven't had that, you know, Freudian conversation yet.
I do wear wigs and pretend to be other people just to fool you, though, Claire. So you are with,
yes,
with other parts of me.
Okay, I like it. Our guest today, Mike Mendez.
Our very first director on Fanatics. Very exciting.
Very...
Someone from behind the cameras.
Yes.
You know him from Grave Dancers, Big Ass Spider, Tales of Halloween, and of course, Claire, you were in Big Ass Spider.
I was in all three of those movies.
You were in all three.
Funny side story. I once said to Mike, I've been in three of your movies. I think I'm your muse. And he's like, no, I don't think so.
Well, thanks for at least giving me a paycheck, then.
You know, I gotta appreciate the honesty. Yeah, he's a great guy. He's a great director. He's extremely creative, which you will find out more about in this episode of Fanatics. And I guess we should mention quickly that aside from those main credits, over the last year, he's released a lot of short videos that have gone viral, particularly one that he made with himself and Guillermo del Toro as mini action figures fighting each other. So if you haven't seen that, look it up. It's amazing.
And if you've loved all of his viral videos that he's done over the last year, then you're going to love what we're going to talk about today, because you have seen in those videos the thing that we're going to talk about: action figures from movies. What a fun thing.
And yeah, little action figures of his own.
So it's a very niche, cool little thing. And he's got just a few of them.
When I think of the word fanatics, which obviously this podcast is about, you know, people who love things, whatever those things are, I think of Mike Mendez, because you love action figures and toys, right?
I do put the fan in fanatic. It's true.
Well, I know so much about your collection, but David does not, and our audience does not. So please, could you start by just telling us a little bit about what you are fanatical about?
Sure. I am a toy geek. I have been a collector of toys and action figures since I was, you know, as literally as long as I can remember. It's always been appealing to me. And mainly I collect toys from movies, because it's kind of my two passions: monsters and creatures and cool sculptures and movies. So ever since I was, you know, like literally three or four, started with Star Wars figures, but any movie that would come out, Alien, or I'm just looking around the room, Terminator, or RoboCop, or whatever, anything that they made of that, I would do that. And I always thought, you know, I'd grow out of it at like, you know, 13 or something, but I didn't. And certainly in my early 20s, any money that I could make was going into that. And now I'm in my 40s and nothing has changed. And at this point, I kind of like, yeah, it's not changing, because I'm gonna die this way. I'm gonna die with a Han Solo action figure in my pocket.
Well, I mean, you mentioned movies. Obviously, you're a very successful director, especially in the horror genre. You know, Grave Dancers, Big Ass Spider, so many movies. We're not going to talk about that today, but I am curious, when did you realize that action figures, what age, I guess, were correlated with the film? And how did you identify that as something that you wanted to sort of do to remember what films you were passionate about, collecting the action figures?
It's a good question. I don't even know if I've analyzed that myself, but I got to think that Star Wars, for I think a lot of collectors, you know, that changed a lot of things, because you could go see the adventure on the screen and then go home and have the vehicles and have the little figures that went in the vehicles and kind of create your own adventures. And so that was always appealing, the idea that you could kind of bring the movie home, and that this thing that you thought was awesome in a movie, you can have in a shelf or whatever. And I also wanted to be a makeup artist when I was a kid, or a creature creator. So I always had a fascination with monsters and any type of cool creature or whatever. So there were a lot of movies, and my parents took me to very inappropriate films when I was young. So it was things like the Thing and The Fly and American Werewolf in London, just had these amazing special effects. And I just wanted that. It's like, I wanted that werewolf. I wanted that creature more than anything. And still, like, I'm still kind of after, you know, those things that kind of made me so excited when I was young. And again, it's still exciting if I see something cool in an Avengers movie. That's how I know if I liked a movie. If I walk out and I'm like, man, I need to get that. I need to get that figure from that scene or whatever.
So when you were 3 or 4 is what you said, the age that you first started collecting action figures. But do you remember like the first action figures? Because I mean, I had Ninja Turtles, I had Ghostbusters, I had McDonald's toys. Like, was it always through a movie from the very, very beginning? Or do you remember having a G.I. Joe or just something else that you played around?
G.I. Joe was huge for sure. And He-Man and a lot of the classic toy waves of the 80s. You know, I was very big into all that. But I'm pretty sure it started with Star Wars, because I was about 4 when it came out, and there was a thing. And thankfully, I had an older brother who, you know, could go out and, you know, go to stores and get stuff. But there was a mail-away, a very famous mail-away thing called the Early Bird Special. And the deal was that Star Wars was such a huge hit, and all the kids wanted to play with the stuff, but it didn't exist. And so they had to, like, rush to get stuff for Christmas. And they gave you a little cardboard, a piece of cardboard that you'd pay $20 for or something like that, or $12 back then. And then that was a guarantee that they would mail you these figures. And it was a Chewbacca, an R2-D2, a Luke Skywalker, and a Princess Leia. And those were the first 4 Star Wars figures, and we got those. And they come with a backing where the other figures that hadn't come out yet, you were supposed to get, and you'd put them in front of their picture so you'd have the whole collection. And that sort of set the seed, I think, for a lot of people. That set the seed on, like, oh, I need to get these. The whole idea of collect them all, you know, that's where it was really kind of cemented, because you had the beginning. And my favorite character was Han Solo, and I didn't have Han Solo. I didn't have Darth Vader. I didn't have a Stormtrooper. And so pretty soon now you had like 9 of them. And it's like, well, to complete the collection, all I need is the Jawa and the Sand Trooper and the Death Star Commander. And then pretty soon you'd have the whole set. And it was just, you know, it's just the beginning of an addiction, you know, truly and genuinely an addiction.
So with the figures, I think different collectors do it different ways. Like, some people keep them boxed and some people have them loose. And it sounds like you don't mind if they're out of the box or in the box, or is it different for each like sub collection that you have? Or what's the process for you? And how do you determine?
It all depends, but I believe toys are to be played with. It all goes about display, you know, because all I'm looking for is the wow factor. I want people to walk in and go, oh my God, you know. Sometimes it's in a bad way of like, what is wrong with you? And sometimes it's in a like, this is amazing. Obviously, I prefer the, you know, the latter. The important thing for me is that I they've got to look great on a shelf, and they've got to look amazing. And sometimes toys just look better in its packaging. Sometimes it looks cool, you know, if you have something that's kind of rare and like, oh, you have an Exorcist doll. By itself, it might not look that cool, but with the packaging and everything, it's like, that looks awesome. So it kind of ranges, but I'm definitely more an open type person.
Has Star Wars been the through line for you? Like, and do you remember of those original dudes that you collected, which of them you played with the most, like versus
Leia just always kind of sat around, or was Leia with and Chewbacca just sat around? Like, what memories? Because I specifically will remember my G.I. Joes and like which ones I played with, which I love the villains. Which are the ones that got you excited to like actually touch?
I think if I had them, I probably played with them. And everything I'm talking about, like my love for toys as a youth and as a child, has come into play into my life in the last 2-3 weeks. I am really going back to being a kid, especially since I have all the toys around me, and I've been making movies with my toys. And that's been my social media presence, and I've had a few of them go viral. I'm going back to what I used to do as a kid of making little adventures and making mini movies in my head. But now, because we have phones and essentially a movie studio in our pocket, I can film them now. So now all the adventures and things that I used to play with as a kid, now I can make movies out of them because I have special effects and sound effects and editing tools and cameras, and I'm really kind of creating the type of adventures that I had when I was a kid. I just did it to amuse myself. To my surprise, it's amusing a lot of other people too, and I've been very encouraged to keep going on it, so I have been.
Oh, it's been amazing. I've been following everything. Like, of course, it first came to my attention. I follow you on Instagram, and I was seeing the stories, but when the Guillermo one went viral,
sure,
that was like unbelievable. I shared that with David. You know, we both absolutely loved it.
Yeah, that took it to a whole other level. And I honestly was not expecting it. I have always liked the Instagram movie because as a filmmaker, it's kind of like, I love that I can make little movies and put music on it and little special effects, and they're nothing special, but it's fun for me. It's a good creative outlet that I really enjoy. And I always, in the back of my head, thought it would be kind of funny to start an Instagram movie, you know, like, hey, I'm making, you know, avocado toast and, you know, whatever. And then it just becomes more and more elaborate, and then really elaborate, and then ridiculously elaborate. And then, but you're watching the whole thing, and this thing that should only hold your attention for 30 seconds has now held your attention for about 7 minutes or something like that. And yeah, of course I wanted my friends to react, and I wanted, you know, my family or whoever to see it and think it's cute. But then the next thing I know, Entertainment Weekly picked it up. Guillermo del Toro retweeted it. You know, Gizmodo picked it up. And the next thing I know, now thousands of people have seen it and like it, and we're in a really weird time there. Everyone's depressed. If I could make 1,000 people smile and laugh, yeah, I feel that's a good way to spend my day.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So I just, like, you know, so I've just sort of taken that. I'm like, you know, that's my job now. That's my job, is I make Instagram movies. Until further notice, until something actually pays me, you know, it's like, no, I'm just going to make Instagram movies for the next, until further notice.
I love that. Okay. So how did you play favorites with all your figures? How did you decide who was going to be featured in one or another piece? And do you have favorites?
I mean, I'm going through it right now as I kind of create new shorts. And really, it is, again, this going back to being a kid. I just sort of like, well, what would be a cool vehicle for like the bad guy to get in, and what would make like a good chase, and what would make a good thing? And I weigh into a lot of it, like what makes sense for the storyline. So right now, I'm working on the next one. But you know, I have this kind of like little series idea that it's different. Filmmakers are trying to kill me. So it's like, okay, well, what toys do I have? And what would be the next director? I have one in mind. I'm not going to say what it is. No spoilers yet. So from that director, what would be his gang? Who would make sense to back up that director? Usually probably from his own films. So you do that and like, okay, and then what would their plot be? What would they want? And what vehicles would they use? And from there, it just kind of becomes a game to me of like, okay, so we go over here to this part of my apartment, and then how would I get out of this jam? Well, okay, I would use the power loader from Aliens, or I would use the sword from Castle Grayskull. You know, in my game, in my mind here, every character retains the character that you know them from. You know, Muppets are Muppets, and every weapon does what you know them to do. I enjoy being in my own weird world. I really do. And I've been having a great time with it.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Mike, when you were a kid, which I don't know if that's it still stays true for you today, because I don't know if you or I or any of us have ever really grown up, especially seeing the fly shirt you're wearing and everything right behind you in our call.
Sure, right.
But when you would like go through the store and see all the different action figures, was it literally just what movie were they in? Or would you ever look at one and go, oh, he's got the thing that if I push down on it, there will be a little, you know, propelling thing, or like, oh, they've got a web mask, or oh.
Oh, I love toys. I love toys in general. And it doesn't matter so much, you know, like, I mean, I'll just grab some things around me here. So obviously if it has a sentimental value, like a movie that I love, I'd love to say anything, you know, that matters. But if I hold on, bear with me 1 second.
FYI, he was holding up a John Cusack holding up a boombox from the movie Say Anything.
This isn't from anything per se. It's a line of toys from the 80s called Inseminoids, but it's awesome. And so I'll certainly collect
it. It's awesome.
Yeah, I'll certainly collect an Inseminoid because it kind of looks like the fly, first off. But you know, I will totally get that.
How many Inseminoids are out there?
I think out of like the large Inseminoids, as there were bigger monsters, I think there's 4 of them, but that's the only one that I have. Sometimes there is the logic of I just like it, but it's cool. But the thing is, when you've collected for over 40 years like I have, you run out of space. And so the bigger thing is more, not so much what I like to buy, because I will buy whatever is cool and catches my eye and I think it's neat. It's just, but what can I put in my room that it's so weird. I have a certain OCD for certain type of things, and I really get into the minutia of the logic of what's on display and why is that next to that, and what does this wall mean? What does this room mean? You know, so I really try to theme it out by kind of genre and by type of movie. So right now, I mean, we can't really see in here, but I'm in my 80s action movie. Or movies of the 80s is the room I'm in right now. And so the Inseminoid is really does not belong here, to be honest. It's just cool enough that I let it slide. But I really kind of, you know, it's more important to me. Like, this room is Aliens, Ghostbusters, Terminator, Planet of the Apes, and Star Wars, and Indiana Jones. Any kind of iconic sci-fi action movies of the 80s. But then outside is all horror. So that will be all your classic monsters, all your Freddies, all your Jasons, all your that kind of thing. And then, you know, so I kind of break it up that way. But again, my love for toys is deep, but it's more about what I can display to keep it thematically logical.
So if cool for you is theme, cool isn't, it's not so much it was like, what did that toy do or how did that toy look, but like, how does it fit into the great themes and collectability, even from an early age?
The action that it does, that didn't really appeal to me as much, because, you know, what I always wanted was just as close to whatever is in the movie. So it's really big on like one-to-one props. So like I have like a life-size Chucky doll. Like that's a perfect prop for me because it's already a toy, but it's exactly as it appeared in the movie. You know, the idol from Raiders of the Lost Ark, things like that always really, really excited me, as close to that. So special functions and secret actions and things like that were less appealing to me as just a cool looking toy.
You wanted it to be true.
I wanted it to be true, as close to the actual thing as possible.
So let me ask you this. The toy and the action figure, the art and the act of actually collecting has changed over the last 40 years. I mean, you mentioned, yeah, you know, with Star Wars, you had to, you know, get this piece of cardboard and prepay, and then they mailed stuff. And then obviously, oh, it's evolved through, you know, I would imagine, you know, clipping the cereal box things to then now, yeah, we have eBay where things are much more accessible.
Totally.
And you can almost trade worldwide. How has that affected your collection and your collecting abilities and what you want to collect?
Well, it probably makes me broker. That would be my main difference, I would think. I'm at a happy place with my collection to a certain degree because I literally have everything I want. I swear to God, that's true. When I go to toy stores or conventions and stuff, it's like, you better dazzle me. You better make me go like, wow, I need that, you know.
Wait, you know what, Mike? I don't believe you. I don't believe there's not one thing out there that you're hunting for. What is the one thing that has eluded you? Maybe it's too expensive. Maybe you just haven't gotten your hands on it. There's only five in the world. There has to be something.
I mean, I'm sure there is something, but if I don't have it, I have a substitute. Like, there may be like, oh my God, there was this great Indiana Jones figures from Hong Kong in like 1996 that I maybe didn't get my hands on, but then I got one in like 2008 from Japan. There's figures that have never been made that I would like to get my hands on. But no, it looked good. There's little things. There was a Godzilla from 1978 from a series called Shogun Warriors. It was just a giant Godzilla that had like a, you know, a cardboard fire that came out and a hand that shot out. And I never got that. And I've always wanted it. Now it's like $300 or $400. You're right. There's always things. They're super specific and geeky. Like there's a Hong Kong company that made a battle damage Terminator from the first movie. And like, I don't have it. And it, you know, they do kind of pain me. And that's the thing, is that they're ridiculously expensive now. That's been the big difference. That's actually, to answer your question about what's different between now and then, is like, yeah, they're way more expensive. So the good stuff, you know, now costs like $300. Like when I was a kid, a 12-inch doll was like $20, you know, if that. Now they're about $300. And if you don't get them immediately, they go up because they're valuable and they only make a certain amount. So like this Terminator that I'm talking about is like about $500 or $600. And I can't, you know, I can't justify that. I can't go like, oh yeah, sure, let's get it.
What's the most you ever paid for a figure?
Not so much a figure, but hold on. This guy here, this was not cheap. You know, I love it. I can't tell you how much I love it, but you know,
that is the DeLorean from Back to the Future.
It is.
That is awesome.
Is.
How many of those in the world are there?
It's probably about 2 feet long, by the way.
Yeah, it's probably, I don't know, probably like 1,000 of them, I think. And that's the thing, is that, I mean, I'm exaggerating slightly, but the price of it, I could have probably put a down payment on a real car. So that's when you kind of like, wow, this is crazy. Like, you know.
Okay. So you mentioned the DeLorean. You showed the DeLorean, obviously a prized piece in your collection and in the appropriate room. So good job with that.
But, thank you.
Would you want like Christopher Lloyd to sign it? Would you want Michael J. Fox to sign it? Does that add value in your opinion?
No, absolutely not. I mean, I would happily have them sign a picture or a poster or something, but the actual toy, like, no way. Get your grubby ink off my prized DeLorean. So no thanks.
A fire happens. Horrific, awful, terrible. A fire like you'd see in one of your wonderful movies. And you can only take one of your toys with you. One of your figures out of the room, outside. Which is the one?
It would be the worst day of my
David,
life, of course. No,
so
I know.
That's where his brain goes anyway. He's a horror filmmaker. This is light.
And I get asked this all the time. That DeLorean would certainly be one of them, but I could hold that with this hand. It would free up this arm, too. So I don't know. I mean, I really don't know. It would literally be, I'd probably get a big box, the biggest I could get, and put as much of the really expensive stuff in it and fill it as much as I can. But that's about all I could do. And it would pain me.
That's a wish to get more wishes, Mike. I'm asking you to pick one toy.
All right, fine. I'll go with the DeLorean I just showed. I love that thing. And I can put two figures inside, so I can, you know.
Again, the workaround. I love it. This kind of goes along with that line of questioning a little bit, but you know, you featured Guillermo. He's known for collecting more props, I think, than toys necessarily. But there's a whole subculture of trading in the prop, toy, figure collecting world. Do you partake in that, or are you just like, it's mine, once I got it, I don't sell it, it lives in my house?
Yeah, I don't. It lives in my house. I mean, you know, as time goes on, I get more stuff. When I look at old stuff, I'm like, yeah, why did I buy that, or I didn't need that? And you know, maybe there's some older things that I don't care about that I maybe would trade. But no, I mean, you know, it's like, I will trade you my money for that awesome new object. But that's about it. You're not getting any of my old stuff, you know. And sometimes I get like, it's either kids or you know, people that like come in and go like, can I just have one? And I'm like, no, absolutely not.
No, that ruins it.
I have a box for children of stuff that I don't want. So if like parents bring their kids over and they're in that want to grab thing, I'm like, here's the takeaway box that you could take whatever you want. Right, I don't care. Right, you know, right. So I, hopefully that kind of balances, because I don't want people taking my stuff, you know, ideally. So
it's a chicken or the egg kind of thing. So what I'm hearing from you, and it's kind of beautiful, that you really love the authenticity of the collectible, the action figure, to be very authentic, to be authentic to the film or the piece that that's connected to. So my question is, do you think, this might be more than you've ever thought about with action figures before, do you think it's more important that you're bringing the figure into your reality, or the ability to get all these action figures and collectibles is putting you in the in their reality? Which I know is sort of what these cool short films you're doing. You're literally melding them together. Do you feel like it's you stepping into their world or them stepping into your world?
You know, and honestly, I mean, the only way I think I can answer that is because of the short films. And I don't think I would have had an answer if I hadn't made the short films. I guess it's no, I'm bringing them into my world, you know, because that's sort of the gimmick of this little series that exists only in my head. It's me and the action figures either trying to hurt me or help me, you know, live my life. And that's sort of like kind of the greater idea behind it, is that, you know, these things, whether they can turn invisible or fly or travel through time, is that they help me accomplish whatever I'm trying to accomplish. It's bringing their magic into my mundane world.
This episode is brought to you by Philo. Do you love TV? Do you love saving money? Then Philo is your solution. Philo has shows, movies, and live TV for just $25 a month. You can even try it for free with their 7-day free trial. No contracts, no commitments, no hassles. Just a better way to watch TV. Never miss a minute of shows like the hit docuseries Where is Wendy Williams? Or classics such as Friends. If you can't get enough TV, then there's no better way to watch. Philo has more than 70 channels like BET, MTV, and AMC. And the best part? You can try it yourself with their 7-day free trial. Sign up today at philo.tv/poppods. That's philo.tv/poppods to get 50% off your first month.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
So if someone were to start, were to say, Mike, I really love what you have going on. I want to get into it. I want to get into it with my, you know, my kid or my wife or whatever. What would you say? Would it be the Pop Funkos as a good gateway collecting item?
The Funko Pops are a great gateway because, again, they're $10, you know, and it's like, what do you get? I mean, that's almost, you know, like a little more than a coffee at this point in life. So yeah, I think Funko Pops, I mean, they're doing a service. The other thing that Funko Pops are great for, and this is actually a bit of is literally a gateway, is that their legal department is fantastic, because there are a lot of things like The Shining that there was not a lot of Shining merchandise for a long time, but somehow they break through. Like, they'll find whoever they need to find and they'll make that deal, and it opens it so that so all of a sudden other toy companies can now make that deal. They really are a bit of, you know, on the edge and leading the charge in that kind of thing. And it's so many things, particularly of the 70s, or toys that people don't make, like Clockwork Orange. There was no Clockwork Orange stuff, but Funko Pop said, no, I bet people would want that. And then sure enough, a flood of Clockwork Orange stuff comes up. I think what's really great about them is cult movies, you know, like I love Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. Everybody should have a Gene Wilder figure, I feel, but nobody makes it. But Funko Pop, they're like, you know, no, we're gonna, like, a big thing, getting too much into the action figure world here. Hold on. A big thing is likeness, right? So the reason you can get away with this is because
Gene Wilder.
Because technically, it is Gene Wilder, but it's not Gene Wilder. Gene Wilder doesn't need to sign off on that, going, hey, that looks like me. So they can do it then. They don't have to pay Gene Wilder.
That looks like a Woody from Toy Story. The eyes.
Yeah, a little bit. He's got an Oompa Loompa, too. You know, that way I can get my Willy Wonka figure and it doesn't cost them the extra money that it costs to get a license, a likeness, because that is a big deal. Like, coming soon are Jaws figures at last. And it's funny, they got the dead ones. They got Roy Scheider and they got Quint, of course, Robert Shaw. They did not get, he didn't do it, the living one.
Richard Dreyfuss?
Richard Dreyfuss, yes, thank you. Sorry, my brain sometimes. Yes, but Richard Dreyfuss wouldn't do it. So you get the two figures and the shark, and now of course a lot of us are like, well, yeah, but where's Richard Dreyfuss? I need all three. So that's actually a huge hurdle in making action figures today. Is that now if you're in a movie now, a Star Wars film or whatever, it's in your contract, you know, like, okay, we're making action figures, you're giving up your likeness. If you made a movie in the 80s, I mean, that was a big deal with Ghostbusters. That's why there was no Bill Murray Ghostbusters figures for years and years and years, because he wouldn't sign it. He's like, no, fuck you. I don't want toys made of me. Finally, he broke down. Now there's tons of Bill Murray action figures, but it cost the toy companies quite a bit. And depending on what the actor feels they're worth, you know, like Jack Nicholson Joker figures. There's hardly any Jack Nicholson Joker figures because Jack Nicholson's like, yeah, no, pay me. If your figure line's not going to be complete, I don't care. You know, pay me. You know, and so that may change, you know, at one day when it's his estate and his children have to deal with it. You'll give me a check for a figure? Sure, great. But in the meantime, there's a lot of actors that hold out that way. Clint Eastwood, there's hardly any Clint Eastwood figures because he won't sign it. And so it is kind of funny that makes a difference, you know, what is available.
Yeah, definitely. So for you, this is a really interesting part of the collecting, the completion of a collection. Like, how important is that completion aspect?
It's so weird and it's so psychological and so like makes sense to you and to nobody else. And that's fine because you're the one buying it, you know, is that certain things like, okay, if they made a set of the Addams Family, well, of course, I need the entire Addams Family. I mean, you know, I can't not have Lurch or not have Grandma or whatever. You know, got to have the entire set. Like the Ninja Turtles. There's no way I would just get one Ninja Turtle. You know, it's like I have to have all four Ninja Turtles. But if they made a character, you know, Rocksteady and Bebop, for example, I'd like to have them. They're hard to get. That's why I use them as an example. They're Target exclusives and they're really hard to get. But if I don't get those, it's okay because I have my four Ninja Turtles and, you know, it's like that's kind of extra and they're part of the line, but it's not part of the core group, you know. And again, it comes down to display. The Ninja Turtles look great in their pose and I need Shredder. I need his two villains, but that does it. The thing's complete in my mind. So yeah, it's weird.
Mike, I have a Rocksteady and Bebop from the 90s that you can borrow for me anytime.
Oh, that's great. Okay, very good. All right, that's good. They made new ones. That's what's killing me. They've made these really awesome ones that are Target exclusives, and they're expensive, I feel. They're $50 for the set, you know, and you can't get them, you know, because they only make a limited amount, and collectors just go and grab them. And it's sometimes you have to go like, yeah, okay, I can live without that, you know, and then it's fine. So
I remember on the eighth night of Hanukkah one year, I got a Super Shredder, and I was just over the moon.
I have a Super Shredder in the next room. It's probably the one you're talking about.
Oh, yeah.
So not which is your favorite film franchise, but which franchise has the best overall line of toys, action figures, collectibles that you
have
in your
house? Who did it right?
Who did it right? Thank you, David.
You got to give it to Star Wars because, you know, I mean, just, you know, 40 years of nonstop production, they've made everything you can imagine. I really, you know, would be hard pressed to think of like what's a Star Wars thing that has not been made. So I got to give it to that. I love Aliens. You know, it's one of my favorite movies. I feel like NECA, in particular, it's a modern line, has done an amazing job with all of those. So I think there's a lot of great Aliens toys. Terminator hasn't done too badly. Yeah, I'd go those James Cameron movies as Aliens and Terminator. I think have some pretty great toy lines.
So how many Ripley's do you have?
Ooh, I can tell you exactly. 6 7-inch ones and 2 12-inch ones. And then there's the ones from the 90s. I'm not counting those. There's the ones, the 5-inch ones from the 90s. But they didn't really look like Sigourney Weaver. Now she was a holdout for a long time. She wouldn't sign the likeness thing. And Jamie Lee Curtis is another one that has finally come over to the dark side. And it's because of nerds like us. It's because, you know, I have a friend, Ryan Turek, who you probably know from Blumhouse.
Uh-huh. Of course. I love Ryan.
He was one of the producers on Halloween, the latest one. And it's because of him, literally, it's because of him that he went up to Jamie and like, hey, you know, NECA really would love to do a figure from this movie. Would you do it? And it's because he gave her the personal plea and, you know, which mean a lot to it. I now have a Jamie Lee Curtis figure, not from the original. I'm still waiting for that. Because again, that gets even more complicated because there's the license that's available from the movies that doesn't have too many strings and attachments attached to it. So the new Blumhouse one, that's pretty clear. It's Universal, it's Blumhouse, and Jamie Lee Curtis. That's all the rights you need. But the original has a bunch of producers attached, and you got to get her, and so no one has been able to make that deal. And so, yes, I really wanted Jamie Lee Curtis from the original movie.
I'm going to throw out a hypothesis that the short you're working on now, the director's James Cameron. I'm just going to throw it out there.
I say nothing, but you're right.
I knew it.
Yeah. Was that because of all my Aliens Terminator or seen right next to
me? Well, I mean, he's one of the top, you know, directors whose work has in this genre has spanned decades. You know what I mean?
Right.
And I would really like to see a Leonardo DiCaprio scene as well from Titanic. So.
There's hardly any Leonardo DiCaprio figures. He's another one that doesn't seem to sign away his likeness very, very much. I'm trying to think. There was.
I need to teach you how to keep a secret.
Yeah, I know. Yeah,
really
totally.
Broke it down real quick.
Yeah, I know.
You know.
Yes, totally. No, I think I'm impressed that she figured it out. That's like, wow. Okay.
you gave her the honor of getting the answer right.
A huge part of it is it has to be directors that have toys made of them. And yes, James Cameron does happen to have a toy made of him. My options are very limited here. I can only take the series so far with what I have right now and not creating new stuff. So, you know,
I think you've got several hundred more films in you by just what I see in this room. So you're good.
But directors, I only have, you know, I think I only have like and a lot of them are Funko Pops, which are no fun to animate. So I can't do
right.
that. But
right.
I think I only have like five choices here. They don't make so many. I wish they would because there's no Steven Spielberg, Scorsese. There's no Kubrick. And believe me, I would love them if they made. Yeah, if they made those, that would give me a lot to work with. Yeah. So
you and Blumhouse should put together like your own like director's toy line.
Oh, I would love that. You know? I've been wanting that
and then
my
you
entire
could get
life.
Your
yeah.
Custom Mike Mendez.
Well, I have my customs. I have been making my customs, and thankfully that came in really handy for the shorts. But no, there's a bunch of people that I would love. John Carpenter. I mean, I would love that line. It was years before I could get a Hitchcock figure of any sort, and that seemed logical to me. Like, why would there not be an Alfred Hitchcock? He's an icon, you know, so.
My last question for you, Mike.
Uh-huh.
You had a brother who helped you out. Was your family, like, all super supportive of this addictive action figure hobby?
Or not really, no.
Was one brother really helpful? Were there other siblings? Or was this just your thing that you kind of always just sort of kept up your own self?
It's my thing. My brother often regrets that he got that early bird special because he's like, I started this thing in you. I totally started it in you. And I'm like, oh yeah, because I would have never have discovered a toy otherwise. you know, no one at school had them or anything. So no, it's definitely my thing. My brother got much more into video games. That became his thing. And I was like, yeah, but video games are disposable. You know, you play them, it's done. You know, you trade it out for something else. It's like, I like having something, you know, it's like, even though, yeah, it's definitely an expense. It's like, but I have that stuff forever in a God forbid, worst case scenario, I could sell this eventually, but I hope I never have to.
I hope so too.
Oh, I don't want you ever selling it, Mike. You are synonymous with mini action figures and toys. Like when I think of Mike Mendez, I think of this incredible collection. So I agree. You can't let it go.
But there's been dark times that, you know, I'm between movies and, you know, things look grim and I have to really kind of make a decision of like, I should sell some stuff. And I've had to. I swear to God, it feels like, which finger do you want to sell? You know, it's like, that's what it feels like. It feels like, oh, you don't need the pinky that much. You know, you can survive with four fingers. You could probably even survive with three fingers, you know, but it feels like that. And so I don't like the feeling. And I'm like,
so what is that emotional attachment and connection? What could you even put that into words?
Probably not. No, it's I feel I need it in my life. I feel that they're a part of my life and they're, you know, I don't want to go so far to say they're my friends, because no, they're pieces of plastic that sit there. They're cool and I love them. And it's one of those things that if I got rid of them, I would know I got rid of them. And like, I remember, I'm thinking about it right now, and there's literally a pain in my stomach. There's a life-size ET that I sold, and, you know, just in a real slim time when I needed rent, I just sold it for what I paid for it. And I miss it. You know, it pains me. I'm like, I hate that I had to do that. Thankfully, it's been a while. I hope it doesn't come up again. We'll see in this weird time. I'm hoping I get to retain everything. And look, I mean, that's somebody else's problem when I'm passed away for them to sell it and deal with it. Or maybe that's my retirement. I don't know. Maybe I decide when I'm 70, like, okay, I'm good.
Yeah, it sounds like you really anthropomorphize them. And like, it's almost like, you know, Wilson in Castaway, you know, how Tom Hanks had the relationship with the volleyball. It was real to him. And it almost sounds like that's how it is. And that's a really cool and creative way of interacting with your collection.
I think the shorts, even though obviously they're heightened and it's to a different level, but I think the shorts probably actually portray a little bit of how my relationship to my toys, to be honest. Yeah, you know, it's like they're a part of me, and they're a part of my world, you know. So,
well, thank you so much for coming on today to
of course,
Fanatics
absolutely.
And talking about your collection, incredible collection. I hope we can post some pictures of the some of the collection when we
absolutely.
Air the episode. Yeah,
I hope
that'd
we
be
can
great.
Come over and play with them sometime. Forget yeah,
absolutely,
posting
pictures. Totally. Once we can all see each other again out in the real world, that would be great. So that would be super.
Thanks, Mike.
Yes. Well, Mike Mendez, thank you so much. And you know, I want to go out and get some toys.
All right.
Claire, I love that there is an action figure of you.
I know. I mean, honestly, David, and I'm not just, you know, I'm not just going to brag, but I am for a minute. There's not just one.
Yeah.
There's four.
What?
And yes, there's several of me in different poses and variations. I always say this is, I mean, you can agree or disagree with me, and you'll probably get an action figure for your role in Dexter, because they do like to do those people. I know that Michael C. Hall has one.
Well, he definitely does. I mean, at the least, I'm going to take some pipe cleaner and make something up myself.
Yeah, exactly. But I always say, like, there's three notches on your belt as an actor. Action mm-hmm. figure, mm-hmm. trilogy, mm-hmm. musical episode in television. Mm-hmm. So I have one down, and I'm working on the other two.
Solid, though. Which is your favorite of the four? Is there a look that you give on one that you're extra excited about?
My favorite is, okay, well, funny enough, the action figures.
Smolder.
The action figures for Buffy, they kind of, and if you look at them, you can kind of see this. They kind of use the same, like, female face for all of them. So right. It's like, it doesn't necessarily look like me. But then they did this tuned-up tiki version of me that's, like, this big. And they only did 500. They sold out before they were released at all. So it's
she's
really,
holding up, by the way, something that looks like 18 inches.
Yeah, it's like 12 okay. inches or something. Okay. I mean, you know, size does matter, David. So
well, when you're an action figure, only that.
or in action. But the point is, the tiki version of Glory, the great Glorificus, is definitely my favorite. It's by far the like best looking one.
Best hair?
Best everything.
Oh,
yeah. Well. We're going to have to share it, you know, on social media. We'll yes. share that later.
Yes.
Yes.
I grew up collecting McDonald's action figures, collectibles, toys. So to the point where my mom would drive to McDonald's and pay, at the time, I believe it was 55 cents per toy.
Okay.
And she would collect the toys. So if there was a collection, if there was like the little X-Men's that came out, or if it was Transformers and it was like the burger transformed into a car and the shake transformed into an airplane. And I had one, I really needed others. And this is only child stuff where God bless my mom, she would and had the time to be like, sure, I'll just, on my way from the supermarket, I'll stop at the McDonald's. I'll pay the 55 cents. I'll literally just get the toy. So I had this whole collection of McDonald's toys, and my best friend to this day, who I'm the godparent of his children, would make fun of me for having all these McDonald's toys.
Uh-huh.
And in my weakness, in my insecurity as a young boy, I had told my mom, get rid of all of them. And then, of course, later on, I'm like, no, those could have been worth a lot. And so for my 30th birthday, he got me like a ton of McDonald's toys. Like, he just shipped me like a huge thing. He like found a zillion from eBay, and that was very, very sweet. And that, of course,
I wonder what price per unit
teared a little.
Was 30, you know, 25 years later. It could have just been like 50 cents. Like,
I don't know. I feel like he like paid $10 and just got a dump of toys. And there were some of those toys though that really were, that were things I remembered. Like, I really actually was like, oh, look at that. Oh my gosh, that's cool. I'm like, oh, this little
Fantastic Four. The Hamburglar and the McFry guy.
Yes.
I mean, that's a whole nother rabbit hole that we're not going to go down right now, is early McDonald's marketing and toys. We'll save that one for later. Maybe we'll have a McDonald's fanatic on the show. Who knows? Anyway, thank you guys so much for tuning in. This was a great episode. I love Mike. I think he's so, so interesting. If you ever have the chance, go hang out with him and check out his collection in person. And David, I'm definitely going to have to take you over there at some point.
Yes, it's so fun, his room. Guys, till next Thursday.
We'll see you later.
You scream, I scream, everyone screams for Nick Apostolides. Yes, he is Leon Kennedy in Resident Evil. And more importantly, he will be with us next week for the next Fanatics podcast episode talking all about ice cream. See what I did there? Oh, and you can learn all about Nicky's and cream. What is that? It's a flavor. Did he make it up? I don't know. Probably. Tune in.
Thank you for listening to Fanatics, a Roddenberry podcast. For more episodes and info, head over to wearefanatics.com or tweet your Fanatics thoughts and stories at @WeAreFanatics.
Yes, that's We Are Fanadicts. Our show is hosted by Claire Kramer and me, David Magadoff.
Produced by me, Claire Kramer, and Colin Baker. Executive producers Trevor Roth and Rod Roddenberry.
Our sound engineer and editor is Elizabeth Joy Windham. And you can thank Stephen Mudd for our theme song.
Catch us next Thursday for another Fanatics episode.
Boy, that's a lot.
I'd rather have a 12-inch Ripley than a 5-inch Ripley, if you know what I mean.
12 inches is not too long.